Six Figure Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I'm John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash. With us today is Heather Wild. Heather is the CTO of Rocketeer, a Las Vegas-based entrepreneurial growth company. She is a dynamic, highly sought-after speaker who has delivered more than 500 presentations. Welcome, Heather.
Hi, guys.
So before we kind of get started into the meat of it, would you just mind giving us a little bit of your history and tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got started, maybe?
Yeah, the easiest way to talk about it is I like to go all the way back to when I was 8 years old and I saw my first computer. And well, I guess it wasn't my first computer, but it was my first of my very own. I walked into a new room in my new house and there was like this amazing machine. It was a PC Junior, an IBM PC Junior. And to me, it was like, the world had opened up. I shut the door behind me and I went up to it and thankfully or unthankfully, my dad had left his, screwdriver kit from putting the desk together next to it. So I started taking it apart. Like I moved the monitor and I took the computer apart and I was like looking inside of it and at all the wires and stuff. And then like an hour later, my dad came in and he was like going to say how happy he was that he got me the computer and stuff. And then he just got so angry, like his face just turned all red, like up to here. And all he said was, 1 hour with his hand shaking like that. And he just like backed out of the room. And so I was like, okay, I have an hour to put the thing back together. So like, I was like having fun, like with putting all the wires back together. And then, so I managed to get it back together. And then, so I learned how to like what was inside the machine. And then I learned how and it turned back on. I got it back together. And then, I learned how to program it. And then ever since I've just been in love with both the mechanical side and the programming side of machines. I mean, I had a solder kit at nine. I was always at Radio Shack getting like transistors and things. Like they knew me by name. So I mean, that's just been my life up till now. I'm just so much of a geek. I always have been, and that's how I live my career.
That's awesome. So, what are you working on these days?
I'm working on a couple of different projects. I'm what's called a fractional CTO. So I get to pick projects that are kind of in transition between that time when they need like a technical co-founder or just like an engineer, but they're not big enough to need a full-time CTO. And so like I come in, make sure that their roadmap is set and that they have developers working on the thing that they need and that their marketing people aren't going a little too crazy on social media and stuff like that. And keep them on track. And then when they grow to their next level, then I can transition out with a full-time CTO in place. And so I'm working on some really cool projects in the Middle East, in Africa, in Australia, in Asia, and here in the US.
That's with a whole bunch of different companies?
It's all through Rocketeer, my own company, but, I mean, we just have clients through that. Yeah.
If your background is in computers and with hardware and software both, what has been the evolution of your career?
So when I started out, I was actually going to be, I wanted to be an astronaut. So I was heading right towards the NASA path. I actually went to the University of Alabama, Huntsville, Roll Tide, so that I could right be at Marshall Space Flight Center and work there. Actually got to do some cool stuff with the International Space Station, while it was still on the ground. And then, unfortunately I there's some issues with my brain, like from when I was born. So I can't go into space because you have to be an X-Man, basically. You have to be like more perfect than Thor to go up there. And so I then transferred up to St. John's College in Annapolis and worked at the Naval Research Labs on satellites while I was there. Those soldering skills got put to work, and also was doing some programming as well on in an old scripting language called Tickle TK. Anyone out there that may know what that is? So we did some satellite programming in the Naval Research Labs. And, but then I decided that I really just wanted to get a break from that and started programming games. So, I did game programming and started to really understand, how to create a world and an experience and an environment for people. And then got a lot of feedback because I had about 500 players of this like multi-user galaxy that I was creating. Cause like back then MUDs, multi-user dungeons, were the thing. And, I was like, well, I want to create a space one because I was all about space. So like I had spaceships, and space suits, like if you landed on planets and you had to like have different things that, there was just all sorts of math that had to go into like, okay, well, you're going to take this much damage from this ship. And that actually got the, eye of THQ, which was a game company back then. So that basically became my calling card. I got hired by them, and my career took off in games. And they didn't have they only had like a part-time role as a community engineer, somebody that could like think in how to get the community activated for online games, which was a new thing back then. But they also had a part-time role for a booth babe, somebody that could like advertise the games to other people. So like I basically was able to make that a full-time role of, okay, I get to work in the game company and I have to like dress up as 7 of 9 during like conventions. And so it was kind of like reverse discrimination. Like no guy could have that role. So I was like, yes, I get the job.
They wouldn't let any of your other coworkers dress up as 7 of 9?
No. Well, there were some really interesting horror stories though. Like one time I was in Columbus for a Gen Con or something. And I was staying on like the 42nd floor of a hotel, and then the fire alarm goes off and I'm like in 6-inch heels and like totally made up. And I'm like, oh, it's not a real fire or whatever. But the fire alarm wouldn't stop. It just kept going. So I'm like, ah. So I had to run out and run down 42 flights of stairs in 6-inch heels. It was bad. The guys at the bottom were just making fun of me. My coworkers, they were like, "Aha, you had to do it in heels." I'm like, "You guys couldn't do that if you tried."
Definitely not. I would have ran down one flight and then fell down the rest of them.
In retrospect, I should have ripped off the heels and just ran down barefoot. But I don't know. I don't know what I was thinking.
All right. And in addition to giving over 500 presentations to a very impressive list of companies, it looks like you've had a varied list of employers and worked for a variety of different companies. See, one that stands out to me here is Evernote. You want to tell us a little bit about that particular position?
Yeah. So after THQ, I was in Boston and I met Phil Liven, who was the CEO of Evernote. Or would be in the future. And back then, we started a company called Core Street, which was a security company. We sold RFID door locks to the government. We had a lot of patents. So a lot of the RFID door locks that you see today that say HID or active identity on them, that's a technology that we created. But after a couple years of doing that and selling to the government, Phil wanted to move on to something else. And so he started to get the idea to create Evernote as a company, and or what would become Evernote. So then he moved out to Silicon Valley, and basically the team from Boston all moved out there. I sort of half moved out there. I moved onto my sailboat in Mexico and worked remotely for Evernote. But for about 7 years, worked to as part of the founding team of Evernote to build it to what it was. And so the product that about 300 million people around the world know and love and use every day is what I helped to build. And it was quite an amazing thing to do.
You were mentioning earlier, though, that that may have sort of had some negative experience, may have come at a bit of a cost to you. Would you like to talk about the kind of burnout process that you were mentioning earlier?
Absolutely. So when you're in a startup, you're in that hustle mindset that like you, well, one, because you don't have any money really. I mean, even if you have money from investors, which we did, there's a lot of times when you don't get, like when you can barely meet payroll, when you have to make decisions about like who's going to get paid, whether it's a vendor or an employee or whatever. And also like, how are you going to get the next customer? So basically every day you're against the grindstone. You have to really make, I mean, every day is important. Every email is important. Everything that you do is time sensitive. And so when you're living with that constant activation in your head, you really don't get any time to rest. And so for me, starting out, I was basically the only one that was in charge of customer experience and communication and like all of the voice of the customer, making sure that tech support was handled, making sure that marketing was done, making sure, I mean, like the communications for marketing was done, handling all the forums, even writing scripts to do patch releases for people that were going to take too long for engineering to do. So like I was doing a lot of quick scripting, like thanks to like my background in that. There's even scripts that I wrote like for the CSV exporter and stuff like that, that have been used over 100,000 times since I wrote them like 12 years ago that have still never made it into the product. Like, but I mean, it was like a quick thing that I had to write, but because the customers needed it and it was something they did, but like you have like 18 hour days, and like you don't have any time for downtime. So after 5 years of that, it led to the Evernote security breach. So like, I mean, it wasn't just me that was handling this. We had our CTO, our ops team, our everybody, like we're all active all the time. And then we missed something and we go down. And then if we're already stressed, now you've got that extra stress on top of it. And I mean, like we handled it extremely well, but a year after the breach, like there were days when I was just crying in an elevator and I didn't know why. You know, I lost 35 pounds in a month. And like, it turned out I actually had developed a tumor in my intestines. And I found out that stress causes cancer. Like I actually didn't know this. I had no idea. And like, I started going down a rabbit hole of learning all about that. Thankfully, they were able to get it all out and I was fine and I got better. But I started to realize, I'm like, oh my God, like if you don't take care of yourself, like not only do you end up crying in an elevator and losing all this weight, but like there's so many more health risks that we're subjecting ourselves to.
So have you found ways to cope for that in the endeavors that you've kind of taken on since, or?
Absolutely. So the first thing I did when I left Evernote was I took a 2-week no tech retreat. So I went to Alaska on a cruise ship, and the only tech that I had with me was a camera, and I barely even used that. It was very difficult. Because for 7 years in a row, I would jump immediately whenever my phone would buzz, like whenever an email, because I was managing so many people around the world, I was managing so much stuff, like I had that feedback loop of I have to get on it right away, and like now suddenly I'm like freaking out because I know that there's people that are trying to get me, and I'm not answering them. And then by the end of the 2 weeks, I was like, I don't care. Like, they can wait. they can wait. Cause there's like a bear out there that's like, that doesn't care if there's another bear somewhere else. He just wants to get his food, you know, or he's just like sunning himself or something, you know? And then, I mean, it really put it in perspective. So what the next thing that I did was I started to write out all of the things that I do in a week. Like, I'm sure you've heard the 168 hours thing where like we have 168 hours in a week. So I started to write out, what do I do every day? And then what I did was I put everything in a category of this is something I want to do. This is something I want to delegate. This is something that I want to delay, like put off. I mean, that is something that I need to do, but I don't need to do it right now. And this is something that I just want to get rid of in my life. I'm going to delete it. So the 4 D's. And I was able to go through every day of the week. And I'd found that I had about 20 hours of stuff packed into every 24-hour day. And I got it down to about 10 hours of things that I was going to do. And I delegated a whole bunch of stuff. And I actually said, I'm not going to delay anything. So I got rid of that column right away because I was like, if it's not important to do right now or have somebody else do it, then it should just immediately be taken out of my life. And so, yeah, so that's what I did. So now I try not to have any more than 10 hours of stuff in any day. And I also have added in at least one full tech-free week a year, at least one, and one tech-free day a week. And that has kept me on as low stress as possible. And no, it is not easy to do. But you just have to do it. So now when I look around and I see all these people that are just on their phones all the time, that are stressing out because somebody hasn't answered their message 5 minutes after they sent it or 5 seconds after they sent it, I'm just like, meh, I'll get back to you when I get back to you, or I won't get back to you at all. It's just like,
so yeah, my son drew a picture of our family in when he was in kindergarten, and it was me and his mother, and I was on my phone, and my wife was on her phone. Oh. And then he was like playing on the floor in this picture that he drew. So it really, you know, it took him kind of conveying that in the way that he could to show that that was his normal. But me realizing I didn't want that to be his normal. But yeah, I think we've all worked for companies or on projects that where 60, 80 and 100 hour weeks are the norm. And probably one of the more recent projects where I was working ungodly hours like that, it was, you know, some of the scrum masters on the team were saying things like, you know, when we're packing the days full with so much busy work or so much work that we're expecting to get done, there's no time for innovation. There's no time for downtime. There's no time to rest and recharge and come back at it with a full, you know, head of steam. So do you find that you get in your coaching and CTO roles for various companies and mentoring and coaching various companies, do you get a chance to have those conversations with technology leaders, or, you know, how do you address it, and how can we address it as a technology community?
So one of the things that I try to do first is model the behavior. So, because if you are trying to tell somebody that they shouldn't be working 60 hours a week or 80 hours a week, and you're working 100 hours a week, then they're absolutely not going to listen to you. They're going to try and work 100 hours a week or 120 to beat you. So if you are telling them, I mean, if you're being an Elon Musk, and unfortunately, a lot of people look up to Elon Musk, not that he's, I mean, yes, Elon Musk is doing some wonderful things. However, he's sending emails out at 1:20 in the morning telling people that they've got to work harder. And he's letting people go if they're not being productive enough. That's an extremely unhealthy work environment. And I understand where he's coming from, because he is a startup. He does have a board to listen to, and he's under a lot of pressure. But he's modeling the behavior that he wants his employees to have. He's the CEO of 5 different companies, so he doesn't understand why humans can't react that way. And yet, we look and we can see his mental breakdown happening. We can see that he's stressed. We can see what happens when you take on too much. So the easiest thing to do is to model the behavior that you want other people to have. And then when you do that, then it becomes much easier to have those conversations with other people. Because if you're saying, I have a tech-free Saturday, you cannot reach me on this day because I will not answer the phone. I'll use my phone like as a GPS, but I'm not going to answer text messages. You know, and if people understand that, then it may start to convince them in their head, not right away, but they may start to understand that maybe this is something I should try. Maybe I'll try tech-free 4 hours while my kid's having a soccer game. Because how many of you have kids that you've taken to a soccer game and you're on your laptop the whole time and not actually watching or have been there? And it's so, but also another way to do this is to actually put yourself in the room with other people that are interested in that. And so that's one of the reasons that I got into speaking and also running masterminds, because like you can, if you put these people in the room together, and then you take their phones away from them, they'll actually have a conversation. It's amazing.
How do you get their phones away from them?
So one of the easiest ways to do it is to put them on a cruise ship where there's no internet.
Which kind of brings up a conference that you're hosting, looks like in 2020. You want to tell us a little bit about that conference and how apparently there won't be any internet?
Yeah. So we're hosting a 16-day, it's a 4-day mastermind retreat on a 16-day cruise, that is going to Antarctica. We chose this for a couple of reasons. One, because it's Antarctica, so it's the last frontier. It's the conference at the end of the world. It's a Douglas Adams reference. Somebody got it. And because a lot of speakers, a lot of people, it's on their bucket list to go. But another reason is, again, because if the idea of being without internet and it for 16 days is so like it gives you heart palpitations, then this is exactly where you need to be. And the people that are going to be there are, we've got Sean Wildermuth, we've got Greg Young and Martin Dowden. And we've got some amazing people that are speaking and to be sucked in a place where you can be surrounded by these minds for that amount of time, it's just, masterminds are awesome for having conversations and to not be distracted by your phone or to like not have the ability to just be like, oh, I'm just going to go check Reddit tonight. No, like you're actually going to have a conversation with this person in front of you who is a genius. Like, that's the idea.
For anyone who goes, will they actually be able to touch foot on the actual continent of Antarctica?
So we are setting up an excursion for people to go to Antarctica. The cruise itself can't because it's a 1,700 person cruise ship, and the laws of Antarctica doesn't allow large vessels over, I think, 100 people to go. However, we're setting up an excursion for people that want to land.
So the cruise ship will just swing by, drop you off, and come back later?
No. We're going to go up to, like, we're going to do the whole thing and then swing back at the end.
Okay.
And the cruise has in the past offered an excursion of its own to land. So that's also an option. But like they haven't released their excursions yet, so we're not sure if they're going to offer that. But that's something that people have as an option as well.
Okay, so you just went ahead and planned a plan B in case they don't have something. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
One of the things that we ask everyone is to sort of take a look at where they're at and give any words of wisdom, maybe if they can imagine like themselves getting started, you know, knowing what you know now, you know, what would you share with others? What would you share with yourself to sort of give them a leg up as they kind of get started on their careers?
Ask for everything, like ask for help from everyone. Mention everything that you're doing to like, just sing loud and proud everywhere of like what you're working on, because you never know who's going to be interested in that and who can help you with stuff. So don't like pigeonhole yourself as like, oh, I need this specific soldering kit from whatever. Say like, I'm working on this thing. And like, just go everywhere you can and just keep mentioning like what you're working on, because you never know who's going to like be like, oh, you know, like I have this like broken toaster that like has all these parts that might be helpful to you. And people are always willing to help. For me, I'm not a fan of asking for money, because I like to, I'm very scrappy and like to bootstrap everything. but I love like getting help, because you never know like who is the person that is going to be the person that helps you to the next level. So yeah, when you're starting out, just let everyone know what you're doing so much that like every other word becomes the thing you're working on. And then you'll just become so infectious with that you'll just attract the thing that you need.
And we talked a lot about a burnout. Do you have any resources that you might be able to point people to who might be dealing with that and trying to get through it?
Yeah. So I have I have a talk that I've recorded on that I gave, on burnout. I'll send you the link for that. But it's on my YouTube channel, as well.
Okay.
And there's a great book, that is slipping my mind at the moment, unfortunately. But if you search about 168 hours, then it'll help to understand like how to break your life up in the way that I was explaining before. Understanding how to delegate your life, not in a inbox zero kind of way, but in a just how much am I really taking on and how to get rid of that.
Awesome. Do you have any speaking engagements that are upcoming that you'd like to plug?
The next one that I am doing, I'm actually trying to keep a low profile this year because I'm planning my wedding. So,
well, congrats.
Thank you. So like, that's a lot on my plate. The next one, just announced, doing DevOps UK, in London in May, and then following that DevSum in Sweden. That's in the beginning of June. And so those are the next two. So a little, there may be a few more in between, but I'm trying to keep a low profile this year.
Awesome. Awesome. And then one last thing, Twitter that you would like to plug so people could follow you? Or...
Yeah, Heathriel. That's Heathriel. I post relatively frequently on there. And you can also find my column on Inc. Magazine online. So it's called Entrepreneurial Revolution, or you can just search for my name and you'll find a ton of articles.
All right, Heather, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
That was Heather Wild. Heather is the CTO of Rocketeer, a Las Vegas-based entrepreneurial growth company. She is dynamic, highly sought after speaker who has delivered more than 500 presentations to a list of clients including Microsoft, Starbucks, Zappos, Nestle, Boeing, MGM, the Four Seasons, and others.
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at sixfiguredev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.